Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond, a podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. The first international conference on transitioning away from fossil fuels was held in April this year. It brought together parliamentarians, indigenous peoples, academics and others for discussions rather than prepared speeches. The discussions took place in small sessions in an open circle format. It was a new format that encouraged free-flowing discussion, opportunities to listen to different ideas, and as many participants said, provided a safe space not to convince each other, but to learn. And this sums up what's often missing in discussions. It's not about forcing our opinions on others or proving we're right. It's about listening. This is one of the most important skills we need today if we're to tackle the enormous challenges we face. And it's also key to turning the tide on dissatisfaction with democracy, something that's been on the increase in recent years. In the article, Why Listening is the Most Important Democratic Skill of the Digital Age, published by The Conversation in April 2026, Sarah Kells says that today, public debate tends to concentrate on speech, focusing on questions such as who may speak or whether free speech is under threat. While these are, of course, key issues, she goes on to point out that they rest on an assumption that we rarely examine, that being heard is a natural consequence of speaking. Listening isn't about keeping quiet and letting someone else's words wash over us. If we truly listen, we engage with what the other person is saying and are willing to understand their communicative intention. So, rather than jumping in and responding to what we think we've heard, or perhaps even want to have heard, we take time to truly understand what's been said. And through doing so, we give our conversation partner the feeling that they're being heard. The thing is, when people have different opinions to ours, we often don't stop to understand, but just try to convince them of our own. To counter this, Kells explains we need to treat our conversation partner as a participant in a shared exchange, not as an obstacle to be overcome. However, we often fall into bad listening habits, in part due to the influence of social media. Today, we're flooded with information and opinions on digital platforms, which are where much of our communication now occurs. As Kells writes, social media platforms are designed with engagement in mind and not listening. Each platform is vying for our attention. To keep us engaged, the emphasis is on clicking, liking, sharing and reacting, which means that posts that provoke strong emotional reactions are particularly successful. But it doesn't encourage us to reflect or necessarily engage in a meaningful discussion. Algorithms establish what content is amplified and who sees it. Instead of arguments and opinions being presented in full, they're often reduced to snippets, summaries, or quotes to elicit a quick and superficial reaction rather than slow reflection. This can have devastating consequences for democracy because people are not being encouraged to engage with opposing or different views. And it's made worse by the fact that people often tend to stay in their own filter bubbles and echo chambers. The same ideas are repeated, and people don't examine other standpoints, learn to compromise, or, after reflection, even change their opinions. What's more, the generations don't necessarily access news and political information from the same sources. For example, a 2024 survey by Pew Research found that nearly half of 18 to 29-year-olds use TikTok to keep up with politics and news, but only 22% of those aged 50 to 64 do so. The problem is that each platform features a distinct content style and employs its own algorithms, and so users are encountering divergent narratives. As a result, it becomes harder to find common points of reference, and this can lead to polarization. As Nancy Gibbs writes in the 2026 article, In Today's Media Landscape, Attention is a Battlefield, on the Harvard Kennedy School website, across generations, political ideologies, regions, and even households, individuals are effectively living in separate information universes. To avoid this fragmentation, it's vital that we engage with others in face-to-face encounters and learn to really listen to what they have to say. Interestingly, Adam Buick, a regular at Speaker's Corner in London since the 1960s, says that even though people can be rude and aggressive at Speaker's Corner, it's nothing compared to what people are like on the internet. Face to face, you're not going to be as insulting as if you're just behind a keyboard. But how can we make face-to-face encounters really count? The answer lies in radical listening. What is radical listening? Simply put, it's a way of listening with greater intention. In their book, Radical Listening, The Art of True Connection, Christiane van Nieuwenberg and Robert Biswas-Diener explain that it's about helping people to reconnect in a meaningful manner. This is why they've developed the radical listening framework. At its heart is a positive intention to listen to someone so as to strengthen connection. Some professions require people to listen in a certain way. Therapists listen to understand a person's problems or perspectives. Doctors to understand their patients' needs and to reach a diagnosis. You as teachers to see whether students have understood and what they still need to learn, and so on. They thus have a particular purpose in mind when they're listening in a particular context. But the authors take this further. They argue that in every interaction we should be active participants, and thus we need to be clear about our intention as a listener. Why are we listening? What are we looking for in the conversation? What do we hope the other person will take away? Listening is active. We make a conscious decision to do so. We always listen with some purpose in mind, even if we're not always fully aware of it. Radical listening is about deliberately bringing this purpose to the fore. Are we motivated by the desire to connect with someone or to influence them, so to encourage them to think or behave in a particular way? Do we maybe want to learn something, so we listen to take in information? Or do we want to understand what someone else thinks or has experienced? Perhaps we want to solve a problem, so we listen to gather information. Whatever the motivation, the authors say it's important to set a positive, deliberate intention at the outset, as this will make us more aware of what's important and enable us to listen better. In addition, we also need to match our listening intention to what will be most helpful for our conversation partner. As the authors explain, meaningful conversations happen when there's an alignment between what the speaker needs and what the listener offers. So, instead of pursuing our own agenda, we need to ask ourselves what might help the other person. Imagine a colleague is telling you about a difficult class they've just taught. Do they really want to hear that you've also just had a frustrating lesson? Or do they maybe need something else? Perhaps they just want a friendly ear and some sympathy. Or maybe they're hoping for some advice because you've worked with the same class. We can listen and wait to see what they want. Or we can also ask them directly, "What would you like me to do?" If we can give them what they need, we'll connect. Radical listening also requires 6 core skills. The first is noticing. So, paying attention to our conversation partner's body language, facial expressions, tone or choice of words. If we can react to these, it shows we're present and engaged. For example, if we say something like, "Your eyes lit up when you talked about how the students reacted." The second is quieting, or dealing with external and internal distractions. This can be as simple as turning off notifications on our phones, finding a quieter place to talk, or calming mental chatter so we can focus on the conversation at hand. If we do so, we'll be more receptive and able to focus on why we're listening. The third is accepting. This refers to respecting that other people might have different views than us. It doesn't mean we have to agree with them, but we have to accept that they might think differently. It's particularly important when political and other topics get heated. As the authors point out, this requires intellectual humility, understanding that our own perspective isn't the only one. And at the same time, curiosity is key. If we're curious, we'll be open to finding out about new ideas before we make a decision about what's right. So acceptance is really about the willingness to hear what the other person has to say. Number 4 is acknowledging. This is about validating what the other person says and their experiences. We can do so by showing empathy by the way we talk and react. It's sometimes easy to dismiss what the other person says, downplay its importance, or take the focus off the other person by talking about our own situation. But if we acknowledge the speaker's feelings and experiences, we're showing that they've been heard. The 5th skill is questioning. By being curious and asking questions that reflect genuine interest, we can have better conversations and encourage deeper engagement. It's like throwing back the ball to the other person in a game of catch. Questions not only show that we're interested, but they also show humility. We don't know all the answers and are interested to find out more. And as the authors point out, questions, especially what-if ones, are a great way to provoke thinking. However, questions need to be well formulated and related to the topic in question, not used as a way of changing the subject. And the sixth skill is interjecting. This might be to briefly agree with the speaker or to offer support, to show enthusiasm or to ask for clarification. It's not the same as interrupting, though. Interrupting can harm the flow of conversation, for instance, if it's used to turn the conversation back to oneself. Short interjections, however, show the speaker that you're engaged, but you're not taking over. It needs practice, as it involves being aware of cultural differences and a person's style of speaking. Some people, for instance, talk at a slower pace with short pauses for reflection, which doesn't mean that it's okay to jump in and take over. We can use these skills to have more meaningful personal interactions, but also in political discussions to make democratic exchanges more constructive, as has happened in the UK. Journalist George Monbiot discusses the importance of listening in the 2026 Guardian article, "Imagine a technique that can heal Britain of division and keep out the hard right. I call it radical listening." Deep canvassing has proven a more effective way than some conventional ones at getting voters to change their minds. Instead of lecturing people or challenging them about their views, deep canvassing is about connection. Volunteers allow voters to talk and discuss their feelings. Instead of then arguing or judging, the volunteers share their own experiences and ask questions, looking for common ground. Monbiot says that listening is what makes this so effective. He writes, "I'm often told that people are too exhausted to engage in politics. That can mean they're overwhelmed by work and family life. But it can also refer to the exhaustion of being unheard. The sense that no one is listening is alienating and demoralising." This is something that the UK non-party political group Common Ground aims to counter. Over the past couple of years, it's focused on listening as a way of reaching out to voters and tackling polarisation. However, instead of knocking on doors and asking people questions to gauge how they feel, volunteers use a stickerboard poll in a town centre to initiate conversations with local people. The volunteers ask them to put stickers on a board to answer handwritten questions. These aim to find out how people feel about issues like immigration, Brexit, the NHS, and so on. The questions are straightforward, such as, "Has Brexit been bad for the country?" and are followed by columns headed yes, no, or a question mark. Once a person has put their stickers on the board, the volunteers ask them why they chose that answer, thus opening up a conversation. They listen to the answers, sometimes gently correct disinformation, and crucially show people that they're being heard. It's a non-threatening approach that invites dialogue and clearly focuses on the speaker's opinion. There's no rush, and people can stay as long as they like. In fact, others often come over and join in the conversation, and this leads to real face-to-face engagement. As Monbiot writes, the feeling of being heard is valuable in itself. And as he concludes, it becomes abundantly clear that people do care about the lives of others, even when influencers and algorithms push them towards hate and fear. The importance of feeling heard has also been borne out by research. A report published in the journal Political Communication in May 2025 provides key insights into the effect listening has on people, including the importance of feeling heard. Authors Eliza Fogel and John Gastel at Penn State University write, "Feeling heard can alter a speaker's self-perception, such as spurring self-awareness, a sense of autonomy, or even a sense of openness or creativity." But if these kinds of listening techniques are to work, they need to be practiced early on. So what can we do in the classroom? We spend a lot of time teaching speaking in classrooms, but listening strategies, not those for listening comprehension, are often a little neglected. Here are a few ideas to help students become more mindful listeners. In small groups, students are given a controversial topic to discuss. Before a student is allowed to disagree with someone else, they should briefly summarise, in one or two sentences, what that person has just said. At the end of their summary, they should also ask, "Is this right? Is this what you mean?" so that the speaker has a chance to correct any misunderstandings. The idea behind this is to encourage them to listen to what's being said, rather than just waiting to state their own opinion. Alternatively, instead of disagreeing, students should first ask one or two questions to understand why the person holds this viewpoint. This could be along the lines of, "What makes you think this?" Students should try to be open-minded and curious. Once they've done so, they can then add their own opinion. At the end of either activity, students should reflect to what extent this altered the way they listened, whether it made them change their own perspective, and whether they felt more heard. Students could also be encouraged to briefly reflect on and set an intention before they listen. You could start off by giving them a few examples, such as, I want to listen to understand, not just to be right. I want to listen to find a new idea. I want to listen to make someone feel heard. Students could then add some more ideas of their own. This will reinforce the idea that listening is something we choose to do actively and with intention. At the same time, students could also set themselves a listening goal to maybe ask one clarifying question, to paraphrase what someone said before they put forward their own opinion, to be curious about other people's ideas, and so on. Afterwards, they briefly reflect on whether they managed to achieve their goal, and if not, why not? When having a class discussion or debate, instead of just listening to the arguments, some students could observe to what extent the debaters are listening to one another and whether they're using some of the radical listening skills. So accepting, acknowledging, questioning, and interjecting. This could be done in the form of a simple checklist to give the activity more structure. It also gives those students who are not speaking a concrete task so that they're actively involved and not just sitting back. And of course, it's important to remind students of the importance of not making things personal. If we disagree with someone, we should find out how they came to their conclusion, as this leads to better understanding. Seth Godin wrote in a blog post called How to Listen, "If you disagree, wait a few beats, let the thought finish, and then explain why. Don't challenge the speaker, challenge the idea." Listening is a foundational skill for democracy, yet it's often in short supply in the digital age. It takes practice, and we need to make time for this in schools. Students need more opportunities to develop their listening skills, to learn to listen with intention, to help others feel heard, thus leading to more meaningful exchanges rather than talking at or past one another. They need to understand that the way we listen is just as important as what we say. As Harvard Kennedy School lecturer Alison Shapiro reminds us, listening comes from a place of respect for others and a belief that everyone has something valuable to say. You don't have to agree with them to listen and learn from them. If we can build this kind of respect from an early age, we're giving students a key skill for their and our shared future. Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four C's and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.